only the time I did this was with Radio Manchester.
All right.
Went there on occasion and done it about 10 minutes with a chap called Clive Price, and he was the chap who did activities on natural history.
Put that on there. That's great.
Good.
I mean, one thing I was wanting to do before we actually started talking about cinema was to ask you just one or two sort of background questions.
Yeah, sure, fire them away.
Let's see what's going
on. That's why I'm just getting the gist of it, rather than me say, well, I was going to ask you that. And
yeah.
Just have to say,
sure.
Yeah.
How many sisters and brothers you have, or what size of family you come from?
Well, I had a father and mother and one brother who was 7 years older than I was.
Right.
He was born in 1913. Yes.
Right. And was your father, I think you said your father was in the cotton
spinning business. Yes, he was what was known as a... He was in the cotton industry, and he was known as a mule spinner, or a minder, was another expression.
Right.
And it was quite an established, skilled job, and they had assistance from what were known as a big piecer and a little piecer. And their function was to assist them, generally, and it's a case of keeping the mules working, and they went in a forward and backwards direction on a kind of track, and it was as they moved forwards and backwards, so the thread came out from one section of the machine onto another part, you see, that, and from that it became cotton thread, and they would then pass it for another function. The other part of a mill or to a weaving shed.
Right. Yeah. And did your mother work at all?
No, yes, she did, but not as family.
Right.
She worked some little time after the father and mother were married, and within 2 or 3 years, I think, of being married, they went to America.
Right. I remember you saying this. Did they stay very long in America?
Well, they stayed 3 years.
Yeah.
They moved from one place to another in basically around Massachusetts.
Right.
Rhode Island, Pawtucket, New Bedford. It was kind of a developing area for the new cotton industry there. And there were many people from Lancashire went, you know, sailed from Liverpool and went to America right away.
Right.
And grandmother, she was then 65, she went with them.
Goodness me.
They were tough in those
days.
Yeah,
quite adventurous to do that. And can I ask how old you were when you left school?
14.
Right.
14 years age when I left school.
Right. And then, what was your first job?
Oh, first job I kept to think about 2 or 3 days. It was in a gents outfitters.
Right.
And I was interested in radio then, and I made contact with a manager of a radio shop, so I went there for a short period over the Christmas. But basically, I'd been up to the age of 20 odd, I was, you know, doing various jobs. I was in the leather trade for a while, in the section which deals with raw cow hides and calf hides too, in preparation of those for use for footwear.
Right.
And it was hard work, little pay, cool conditions, raw conditions, and then there was nothing to look forward to, so I just packed the job in and went down and went to London. I went on a scheme which was known as a juvenile transference scheme.
Right.
Where there were certain developing places like Letchworth, Garden City.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Bedford. and I was there about 2 or 3 months, and I didn't see any prospects then. So, however, I said I was, homesick, and then I, instead of going home, I got my things from my digs and got the next bus to London. So, from then on, things were somewhat better.
Right. So how old were you when you went down south?
16 years.
16, right. Mm. I remember you saying, because you worked in various places, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I've worked all over, really. But generally, I'm being in the engineering come electrical industry.
Right.
So much so that I was kind of, during the war, reserved occupation rather than being, called up.
Yeah.
And I worked on aircraft cameras in the main, photographic equipment, for the first 2 years of the war, and then from there I went to an electrical firm called Ferrantes.
Oh, right. Yes.
And there was on electrical instruments there, which I worked in a laboratory.
Yeah, of course they've got a branch in Edinburgh, I know.
Well, I know the chap who started that.
Really?
I knew absolutely at the south of it. The 2 or 3 people from section I worked in went up there. They went to Edinburgh, and then of course from there it went from strength to strength.
Yes.
But it was a good family firm. You get the old Sebastian Ferranti come round and the Ferranti sons there.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
It's interesting, because the reason I'm saying that is because my uncle worked in Ferranti
for
a certain apprenticeship there.
What was the area called? It wasn't Portobello, was it?
It's somewhere near Leith, or?
Yes, that's right. Yes, yeah. Yes, I was on the point of going up there, but then again, my parents were getting on a bit, and I didn't want particularly to leave them there, so I was with Ferranti's until my redundancy in about 1946.
Yeah. So how long have you been in Bolton?
Oh, born and bred in Bolton.
Yep.
I was born in Bolton. I was there about 2 years, and then we moved from there to Preston.
Right.
And then that's about 16 miles from Bolton.
Yeah.
And then my father got a job in Bolton, and we moved to a place called Farnworth.
Right.
So I was in Farnworth from the age of 5 and until 4 or 5 until I was 7.
Right.
And then that's where I started with picture going.
Right. Right. And can I ask if you've been married at all? Are you married, or have you been married?
Well, my wife died 5 years ago. I was married when I was 32 years old.
Yeah.
So I had a chance of getting about before settling down. So there was no commitment there as to what I did.
Yeah. And did your wife work herself?
For about the first 12 months or so, and then we had a daughter. And then since then, she kept it on, and that was kind of all time purchase, you might say.
Yeah. And is it just the one daughter you have?
Yes,
there?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great. As I say, that was just to get a wee bit of background information about you.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to ask is, because I'm taping this, these tapes will be kept in Glasgow University.
Yes, fair enough.
And it's possible that researchers might listen to this
the future. Oh, yes, indeed, yes.
Would you have any objection to that?
No objections whatsoever, no. Something for posterity.
That's right, absolutely. I mean,
but some people would object, agree to that,
I mean, in that case, could I ask you to sign this form?
Yes, it's what they call a release form, like photographic models have when they're in session.
That's right. Just to stop you suing us, I think.
Yeah.
I'm sure there won't be anything incriminating.
No, but you've got to safeguard yourself, that's true.
Mm. So it's just stopped in this bit here.
That'd be alright. Do you want the date? Is it
please.
What's the, is it 12th?
Yeah. And I'll sign that as well.
Yep.
That's the sort of official.
Yeah, yes,
official
yes,
part,
yes.
I mean, the first thing I really wanted to ask was about your earliest memories of going to the cinema.
You said, yes.
You were about seven now.
No, earliest memories would be about 1925, right. yes. If not 24,
yeah.
Just between those, and that was at Farnworth.
Right.
And I went to all the cinemas there in time, but you know, there's cinemas then and there are cinemas now. I mean, the cinemas then were cheap, it was a form of escapism, you know, a lot of this glamour, Hollywood, and that people treat football stars now and pop singers. In those days, it was a case of film stars and all the glamour that went with it, and it was a form of escapism. And of course there were quite a number of cinemas that opened up within, and they kept going within a particular period, and then it kind of tailed off. And like Bolton now, for instance, I think there used to be about 26 cinemas at one and the same time.
Yeah.
Different grades. I mean, there were what they used to call the buggots, you know, the one same beer that we went in with a jersey and came out with a jumper. But and then there were higher class types, and of course this was the days of silent films as well. But I can rattle off lots and lots of the old stars, the comedians, and particularly cowboys. I was mad on cowboys, like kids are mad on football now. And we used to come out of the cinema, and well, Saturday afternoon sometime and night time, and we'd call it the chipper for a penny with the chips, and went to the one that gave the most scraps, you see. And we had a particular run, you could run a particular way, and you did that with your hands as if you were on a horse, you see. So, yeah. I always wanted to be either a cowboy or a mounted police in those days, not an engine driver or the likes. But they used to show a main film, and they also had what were known as a feature film. Sometimes the comedy, and another thing they used to have to try and get people going week after week, they would have a serial, you know. Probably have seen kind of these Pearl Book films on reissued on television now, where you know it's just strapped to the line and the trains come in and then plonk. But one of the peculiarities we had in those days, kind of peculiarities, but some cinemas used to have it such that you went in, and if they had a bit of an orchestra, you know, two or three players, the violin and piano and that, they would start for about 5 minutes before the film started. But then they would show, a slide would come on onto the screen, a black and white slide, and they had a song sheet there, and they had a white dot, conspicuous white dot you could see from the back, and that would kind of time the tune for you. I don't know whether anybody's mentioned this or not to you. And other things, that any emergency, they could have a piece of a square piece of glass, about 3¼ inch square. They could put smoke on it with, I think this is the method they use, from a candle, and that would have a sooty appearance. And then they would scratch on there, and that could be projected onto the screen. And then the seats were such that the cheapest parts used to be formed, you know, like this, and
right.
You know, but
yeah.
And then of course, particularly where you got murder films, you know, anticipating what the end's going to be, some little lad in Devil Mount would say, "Oh, I'll do this," you know. And then the weepers, where a woman would take things to heart, you know, and the likes, and somebody shouts out, "Do you want a bucket, missus?" Yeah, but Saturday night used to be a bit difficult at times, because until there was no television, no other form of entertainment particularly, and people didn't go into pubs like they do now, and they used to form queues. They had, usually there were two programmes a night, you know, the same programme. They would start at, say, I think 6 o'clock till 8, and the other was 8 o'clock till about 10 o'clock. I'm not exactly sure on the time, but round about that, so you could go second house. And then of course we got the audience that came into being, and they were kind of quite classy and good and separate seats. There were some cinemas introduced at the end of a row of what we used to call plush seats. They had an extra wide one, say here, and that would be the aisle, you see. And these were two-seaters, ideal for cutting couples, you know. There was a cinema in Bolton called the Queen's Cinema there, and they had two pay entrances, one for a higher price than the other one, and it was split across entirely with a high screen about 4 or 5 feet high at least, you know, so they couldn't climb over, and that would segregate the cheaper ones from the dearer ones. The Capitol Cinemas in Churchgate was a little bit interesting insofar as there they had, and as usual with most of them, that the dearer seats were at the back. And this particular cinema, they had a row of seats which were the cheapest of the lot. The fact is that they got people in and they sat there, but they were too near the screen, so you finished up with a sore neck afterwards. And there was one cinema there called the, I think it was called the Regal originally, and then I think it was called the Olympia, or vice versa. You can check that up if you wish. And as some of these names, they changed because different companies took them over. One company, or a set of individuals who owned perhaps two or three companies, until you got the audience type of cinema coming along with, you know, more national type of control. You know, not quite to the extent that Canon do now. But this particular one was one of the biggest seating capacities in town, and they had a screen there, and it said that some little bit time before I started to go there, and this was in Bolton, but it was a penny cheaper to go behind the screen. You know, you just had to put up with the fact that any writing that came on was the other way around, but at least it was cheaper. And then of course a lot of these were not carpeted floors, but wooden floors. And then again, Lancashire being as it was in those days, many people wearing clogs, so clunk, clunk, clunk with the clogs, you know. And then of course we had people come round with ice cream and chocolates and the likes. Yeah, it's quite a... I forget what year it was when I stopped going. I've only been to the cinema about once in the last 10 years, and that was a film called 2001, and it was one of these scientific ones. I think it was by that eminent scientist, what's his name, Clark, is it Alfred Clark?
Oh yes, Arthur C. Clarke.
Arthur C. Clarke, yes, that's the one. But. Yep. I didn't rate much of it, and I've seen more people come out of that film before the completion of it than any other time. And that was one of the last times I went. But what stopped me going was that there was a cinema in Bolton called Crampton, the Crampton on Crampton Way. And before that closed, and it's now become something else, I went and... I went to a film called Mutiny on the Bounty, and I'd seen it once and I wanted to see it again. And it was the fact that there seemed to be a change there, and what that was, that there were a lot of locals, youth, you know, boys and girls, teenagers, they would congregate at the back, and there would be a lot of chatter, and that kind of, you know, started it. It kind of put me off in a way. But, as I say, used to know all the film stars and what they did to get the picture show, was it? And the picture go, the various magazines. And, as I say, even now I can tell all the cowboys that Buck Jones and Art Accord and Hoot Gibson. Tom Mix was my favourite. And, yes, Ken Maynard, Tom Tyler, yes, the lot.
Well, what was it about Tom Mix that particularly appealed to you?
Well, I think he was partly in the, featured in comics as well, you know. He's supposed to have the ability to carry a woman in her arms and jump over the back of a horse, but physically I don't think that was quite so, but you used to get tales going around. And then, of course, eventually colour came into being, didn't it, some many years afterwards. And when Marvel looked at the adverts in those days, you know, when they introduced colour, and then, of course, they've gone, you know, by leaps and bounds to more, you know, high-tech commercial stuff. One feature about Bolton was the other place there, you may well have seen it but not know it, it's called Victoria Hall. And they used to have Saturday night concerts there. It was, I think, a Wesleyan church and still is. And they used to have a concert party, a local concert party of good artists, you know. Not as pop stars these days, but acceptable artists, groups, individuals, instrumentalists and the likes, and that would be on for about three quarters of an hour to an hour. And after that they used to show a film, a full length film, and it was only fourpence and all money, and that used to be, you know, quite full and very good. There was one called the Electric Cinema that changed its name to the Embassy. I forget why it was called electric, whether it was the type of illumination, because at one time they used to rely on carbon arcs for the illumination, you know, kind of controlled lighting for the showing the film. I didn't realise at the time that, you know, I used to look back and see this light shining from the projection room, and there was this terrific beam coming out. These days, of course, one's aware of cancer and smoking the lights and didn't realise perhaps what we're, you know, inhaling. A lot of the local cinemas particularly used to display adverts roughly about 18 inches high by about 8 inches wide, which were showing the local cinema what the programme would be. And these, the chains, the programmes used to change in local cinemas twice and even sometimes three times a week. There was one time when I think I was about 6 years old, I went to the cinema seven times. That was, and they didn't show them Sunday night, so that, that was once every night and once on Saturday afternoon. But yes, there were memorable days with those, yeah.
How often did you usually go?
Oh, about twice a week on average, or two to three times a week. It depends, I could get two or three, you know, coppers from your parents.
Yeah.
Things were very tight in those days, and the likes. I mean, tram car fares were only halfpenny and the likes, and yeah, that's what I used to kind of spend my money on, because there weren't the, you know, the toys and other facilities that there are now. I mean, we used to have lead soldiers that we used to play with, and little games called Piggy. I don't know whether you've come across Piggy or not. Well, Piggy had a piece of wood about 2 inches long and about an inch and a half diameter, with one end of it curved in the form of a pig's snout, and that you would put on a stone in a particular position, and have a stick in the form of a slat, and you would then hit the tip of the wooden piggy, as they would call it, and that would cause it to flip into the air, and then as it's descending at the right height, then you would give it a terrific blow, and you would, you know, it would go a particular distance. And then, of course, you would have, you know, individual competitions, and it was how many strides, you know, and the likes, you see. Oh yes, they made a lot of their own games and fun in those days, like in school playground, where I'd ride a Kench on a wooden donkey, you know, getting one behind the other, and one would have his hands against the wall like that, and the person behind would have his hands on the person in front on their hips, and so you would get half a dozen. Then there would be two teams, and then they'd take a run, and they'd jump on the back, you know.
Yeah.
And then I think they would put their fingers up, and then it would be a case of, well, how many fingers are there? Well, if they guess right, you see, then they change places.
Oh, right.
But I mean, these were things that would be entirely discouraged by health and safety regulations now, I should think. And then, of course, there were marbles and cigarette cards, you know. We used to spend hours asking various fellows, strangers entirely, that have you had a cigarette card, and they get sets of them, and you know, see them in antique fairs and that now. But we used to use those as games. We had what were known as knockydowns, that's standing a card at an incline against a wall on the flagstones, and then you'd a good stiff card, you would then pitch it to it and knock it down, and then if you knocked it down, you would then, you know, claim those cards. And then we had another type of game in which you would throw one, and then your opponent would throw one, and then it was who got on one cigarette card first, and he would then collect those, you see. So, you know, little things like that were of interest.
Did you ever collect the cigarette cards of film stars?
Oh, yes, absolutely, yes. I've got quite a few, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes. A lot of them long gone, but of course you got, you know, Robert Young and Gary Cooper, Ronald Reagan when they were coming up.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly Mickey Rooney as one of the young stars there, along with Freddie Bath Hollymew was another one, and then they grew up a little bit to teenagers, and they were part of the Hardy family with was it Loose Tone, the Rio chappy, who was the father. But to see Mickey Rooney now is still short, but he's really plump, and
yes,
you wouldn't credit it, you know.
Yeah.
When you see them, you wonder, do you even compare and contrast with what you were as a youngster.
When you mentioned Robert Young there, did you have favourites amongst the stars?
Yes, 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 particularly cowboys apart and the like. We had the adventurous types such as Douglas Fairbanks Sr. You know, we've got at the moment his son, who's still going strong, 80 odd year old. But the father, he married, of course, Mary Pickford. And actually, I don't know whether you realise it or not, but he was a very short man, was.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
With consequently, all the stars and the people who acted with him were proportionately shorter.
Which Mary Pickford was quite tiny, wasn't
she? Oh, yes, she was indeed, yes.
Yeah.
And of course they formed their own film company.
Yeah.
What was it called? I forget now, but yes.
It's not called, it was something like Pick, no, their house was called something like Pickfair, wasn't it? It was
yes.
Some combination of their names.
That's right, yes,
yeah.
Yes. It's like that other one with more recently comedy, somebody like Daryl, Del Roy or something like that.
Yeah.
As, that's not the exact name, but one similar to that was, you know, in production for a long time.
Yeah. So did you like these sort of adventurous films?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I mean, there's, you know, they look a bit corny nowadays when we realise the physical impossibility that some are and the like, yeah. But, yes, you used to like going to the serials, of course, and then, of course, they would have comedies like Aaron Lloyd. I don't know if you've seen Aaron Lloyd ones, but always with the glasses on. But he never had lenses in them, you know. And Charlie Chaplin, of course, he was a fair bit. Well, he used to come to Lancashire. He'd been to Bolton as Charlie Chaplin. And he had a brother. I remember his brother when a cinema in Falmouth was opened, roughly about 1928, I think it would be. And that was Charlie's aunt. And I think it was Sid Chaplin's brother who was in it. Yeah.
What about people like Laurel and Hardy and...
Oh, well, they were favourites, of course, yes. They were good straight comedies. There were no, you know, undercover subtleties like there are now, you know, close to the bone stuff with them. They were, you know, a real slapstick. There are no comedians nowadays, I don't think, that can play with people like that.
Yeah.
they got a museum there for him.
Right, yeah.
And, yeah, the later ones to follow, of course, were people like Malcolm and Wise. Mm. And, but we, there used to be all five Evers End films, and then the nearest one, the one nearest to the Knuckle used to be Frank Randall, you know, what the All Mother Riley films. Really slapstick stuff. And, yeah, there were one or two travel films as well, which were very good. Before films came into being, of course, we got part of this entertainment was established with local Sunday schools or at Sunday night, you know, to encourage youngsters to go. They had magic lantern shows with a religious theme, of course, and then there used to be, you know, potato pie or kind of pea soup suppers. I think that was either Saturday night or Sunday night, I forget which now, but it used to be at weekend. And, yeah, so I think it's still like going to. It was a form of escapism, which is often mentioned on radio and the like, yeah.
And what about, because there were some very good stars that came from Lancashire.
Well, yes, I was going to say that. Yeah. I thought, well, I must mention Manchester and the likes, of course. You've got Grace of Fields, of course. She was from Rochdale, and her surname was Stansfield. She made a film called Sing As We Go, and that was part of that was shown in Bolton, opposite, exactly where I used to live.
Ah.
And those mills have just, this last few years, have now disappeared. They're becoming industrialised, the area there, and they've got these modern type industrial units and new arterial roads there that connect other roads now, but the memories are still there and the like. And Manchester, of course, there's two in particular I used to know and like, and one was Robert Doughnut, who was in the original 39 Steps. Mm-hmm. Yes, he was a favourite. And another one, he was top cast, and that was Reginald Dennis. These may be new names to you, but you know.
Robert Doughnut, I like.
Oh, yes, yeah, well, yes, he was very good, yes. Yeah. He was that kind of a gentle type of person.
Because he was in that Goodbye, Mr.
That was a super one. Yeah. Goodbye, Mr. Chips, I saw that at the Odeon. The Odeon Bolton, that during the wartime, if memory serves me right, you could reserve your seat for sixpence. You know, book your seat for six of all pennies. And of course, with me and more modern, they had a kind of a cafe type of place where you could just go and have something to eat and drink before or after the show as well. It was all kind of attraction there. But during the war, they had a string of bombs on Bolton, and there was one smaller one let at one side of the cinema and one at the other side where there were a crowd, and that's, you know, what my memory, you know, perceives. So I was in Falmouth for about 4 years, but still I went to the local cinemas and, you know, kept in touch that way. My brother, he was similarly inclined. I think it was one way of getting out of the house as much as anything, because there was father, he was tired and he was bad tempered and all that, you see, so it was, as I say, a form of escapism.
Did you ever go with your parents to the cinema?
Oh yes. We go there when there's a good film. It was a Saturday night because he was a cotton spinner, and he'd go to work at 6:30 in the morning, start at 7:45, and he'd get back home at roughly about 6:30 in the evening. And when it talk about cotton spinning, there was no sitting down. They couldn't even sit down to have the dinner. They kind of crouched, squats on the floor and have it there. There were no canteens as such, and they worked in the bare feet in the cotton mill. This is another story in itself, is the cotton industry, which is a lot of it's gone now, but used to be all round here. But Bolton and other towns, they specialised in certain counts, that's quality of yarn, be it rough or fine, depending upon what was, the resultant manufacture that they were for perhaps fine shirts, you know, thin, good quality shirt. On the other hand, they could be used for rough toweling and floor cloths and things like that, you see. But one thing about cotton mills, they reckon, was that they never wasted anything. Even the cotton waste, they used a string known as banding. I've still got quite a lot left. My father brought home about 20, 30 years ago. They had unlimited, access to it. And I think they used, you know, nowadays people get paid by cheque at one time, they got paid by money, but with the cotton industry, the miners or mule spinners, they had a control over their individual big piece and little piece. The little piece particularly used to clean up a lot of the dust and used to go under the machines, but a cotton spinner, I reckon, used to walk something like about 10 miles a day. If you're on your feet between, say, 7:45 and 5:30, and you'd only about 1.25 hours, you know, for dinner time, no breaks in the middle, because it was all production, it kept up with the machine. And if you're walking at two miles an hour, walk and then stop and tie up ends and walk and that, I mean, going on that five and a half days a week, no Saturday morning. Yes, it's hard life. Yeah. Now, of course, it's changed a lot. They've got more automatic. Mm. The mules have gone and they've got rings spinning in and even more automatic machines. And then they're going to get a lot of work during the war, or just after the war. A lot of foreign labour came in, particularly Polish people. And they did a few left in Britain, but a lot of them, they went on to onto Canada and other places like that. But and then again, the machines were going from 7:30 till 5:30 at night, with just a short break. And now, of course, they've got a lot of Asians working, and the machines are going 24 hours a day for 7 days a week. Anyway, that's digressing a little bit off the cinema.
I mean, it's interesting getting that sort of background, because your father must have been really exhausted in the weekdays.
They were hard.
Any energy to go out to the pictures.
I never remember a doctor coming to my father. I never remember him being off work. And he was working in the cotton industry for 50 years.
But you were saying you did sometimes go out on the Saturday night.
Oh yes, yeah. Yes. But another thing they used to do was, they went to bed roughly about 9:30 at night, and then quite often Sunday they'd go, my dad and myself, we'd go for a walk in the bit of country that was around till dinner time, and then he used to go to bed in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a, you know, general practice.
Yeah. Did you go to church on a Sunday?
Well, I used to go to Sunday school, and then I drifted off, and especially when the, you know, school superintendent, you know, didn't bother coming.
Yeah.
But then again, we were kind of growing up, and there were lads, and then we used to go walking and the like. Yeah.
So was actually a thing that I meant to ask, but I didn't. Were you raised in sort of Church of England then, or?
Well, I was christened in Church of England.
Yeah.
And that was just for the christening. But then again, I went to the local Wesleyan Methodists, and they had a scout troop there, and used to go camping with them and the lights.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Did your family have any strong political views, or?
I think they might have had, but neither party were any good. And it was always a case of, you know, when there was any news on the radio, it was there.
Yeah.
And they were the reason for everything going wrong, be they Labour, Conservative or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting when you're saying that about the local stars. I mean, were there stars that were particularly popular, do you think, in Bolton? Or?
Oh, yes, there would be. Yes. Well, Charles Lawton, that's fair. They were real character actors, weren't they? Charles Lawton, Cedric Hardwick, there was another one that used to take off Disraeli, I forget who it was, that one. Yes, they were real top notches. Mm. And of course, Wilton's had its more recently. Frank Finlay was in Bolton. He lived at Falmouth. He went to Bolton School, and I think he and McShane, is that Lovejoy?
Yeah.
I've got to get the connection yet, but I think his father had a barber's shop in Bradshagate, Bolton. It's no longer there now, but that's what I think. There's a connection there as well.
Yeah.
And of course you've got Huddersfield, which is over the back here. They produced stars, didn't they? Oldham particular. You see, a lot of these stars, they were kind of quite good at school, and then they would join the local amateur dramatics, and then there were the reps where they toured up, you know, up and down the country. Mm. And of course, from there, they got established. You got the smaller companies like Basil Dean and Elstree and Pinewood.
Yeah.
And they kind of grew up from small beginnings.
Yeah. That reminds me. Cause
Stuart Granger was another one. He was from Huddersfield, and I've got his autograph there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got it on a youth hostel card that during the war went to North Wales on a cycling holiday. And we were near Capel Curig, and we saw, there were three of us on bike, we saw this kind of a fringe van or a dry cleaner van. I didn't know which it was, but it had a board that dropped down the back, and there were about three or four figures there sat on this kind of back of the van, and they were in Spanish clothes, you see. And I asked someone, what's going on here? Oh, they said, I'm making a film. I said, oh, that's interesting. And round the back of Capel Curig, which has limestone and trees and the likes, and they so I said, oh, we'll have a look at this. And so we saw the old setup there, and they're making Lady Eleanor Smith's book of caravans. And well, it was quite funny that there were quite a few of us around, and being wartime, there weren't the cars around or nothing like that, but we had quite a good view of everything. And he was supposed to be attacked in this kind of a setting between two or three big limestone rocks, and there was one of the assistants there in overalls, or there were two of them actually, and they were in this big tree over this rock to give it kind of a scenic effect. Mm. And Stuart Granger, he had a horse there. He was dressed in period costume as well, kind of a well-to-do, with a cape on and, you know, tight trousers and the like. And then it was a case of a daylight today, perhaps more cloudy, and the sun would come out, and then it would go in, you see. So it was a case of just judge it so that it would dash through this kind of opening between these rocks, you see, and it's supposed to be attacked after that. And then it was on the point of going, and then the sun comes out. And he did that once, and then it wasn't quite right, so do it again. It was on the point of doing it, and then it would cloud over. And then the next time, he's ready for doing it. He said, for Christ's sake, give this bloody horse something to make it go, you know. Anyway, that being so, they've done these shots, and I was close to him, and I had a little Russian camera with me, a black and white film on. And I said, oh, can I take your picture? He said, yeah, but can you undo this? Oh, and there was a little boy stood at the side. And, you know, he was quite into it. And he said to this little lad, he said, do you like horses? Yes, sir. He said, well, will you hold this? And then he turned around to me, he said, would you undo the knot at the back of this cape? You know, there I am. I said, well, can you sign this? I had nothing else. And a pen and... there were no barriers in those days. I think it was a pen, that's right. And I'd got this youth hostel card. I still got it, you know, where when you go to the youth hostel, you put your card in, and it gets stamped that you've been at that particular hostel at that particular day. Oh, yeah. And they were staying down in a place called Better Secured there. Oh. Yeah. Another time, I was 19. Well, in 1948, I wasn't married then, and I was at a laboratory technician at a public school called Haileybury.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the top ones at Haileybury and Imperial Services College, which is at Hartford, which is just north of London by about 12 or 13 miles there. And they came to make a film, I think it was called The Guinea Pig. You know, who was in that but Richard Attenborough.
Mm.
And Sheila Summers there. Was Sheila Summers' wife? Yes, it would be. Because I think her father was Alistair Sim.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they were making this film, and they came to the college because they had a superb setup for a cricket match. They had the pavilion there, and they had extras there, and on the lights, and they were filming this. He was supposed to be playing this shot as Richard Attenborough, and to get the sound effect was one of the directors there threw a ball at a bat being held by another director there, you see, or equivalent, and it's supposed to, you know, bang it up into the air. Sorry.
That's okay.
And everybody linked up with this ball, and one of the people at the supposedly school, a headmaster I think it was, another teacher there, they were sat on a phone, and everybody looked up at this ball, and this ball actually came down and caught one of these two chaps. Now, one of these chaps I think was Cecil Parker, I don't know who the other one was. Oh, I'll tell you who was in it as well, Robert Fleming, and I think he's a local, he's from this area, and it caught him just in the shoulder here. Another few inches it would have hit him on the head. But, you know, that's another thing I used to like, you know, come across anywhere where they were doing some filming. Yeah.
I was interested when you said that, the Stuart Granger story, because I was just in Battersea Crowd at the weekend.
Were you really?
Yeah,
oh,
yes.
Yeah,
so it's interesting to know that had been filmed there.
Oh, yes. Oh, well, another one they did there was, I think it was up the Khyber, was called, with the Kenneth...
Kenneth Williams.
Kenneth Williams, yes. And there they had cutouts of hardboard stuck on, you know, representing, you know, fortresses or things like that. And Eric stood there up in one of the passes there from Battersea Crowd for quite a long time. And another place quite close to there, and it should be there in probably another fortnight or so. Next week, I'll be around with a friend of mine. We're having 3 days in North Wales. It's Port Marion.
Right.
Have you been to Port Marion? Well, that's where a lot of these... The Prisoner, Patrick McGee series. Well, they were taken there. That was quite good as a setting. Yeah.
Mm.
There must be lots of other things like that that you just can't recollect.
Yeah.
Of course, Bolton, it did The Family Way with James Mason, and he's another... It's from the same area as Stuart Granger and Huddersfield, I think he was a product of them. And of course, Holden with Dora Bryan and Graham Stark, was it? Alex Hikes. In fact, I used to work with for Antis during the war up Bury there with the chappy Bill Lawton, and he married Dora Bryan. And then, of course, they went down to Brighton. I think they've got a tell there. And of course, Grace Field, she went down to P7. And of course, eventually the Isle of Capri.
What about George Formby? Was he?
Oh, yes. Very popular with George Formby. Everybody knew George Formby. There were loads of comedians. You see, one of these things is that. Probably like the Scottish comedian, you've got Will Fife, you've got Harry Lauder and the likes, and they kind of gravitated from, you know, through poverty. And the same with the boxers. The boxers were, you know, it was one way of getting some money quick, and they got established and the like. But George Formby, he was born at Wigan, I think it was. But I think remember right, this is George Formby Jr., isn't it?
Oh.
I'm not sure whether he had a father who was a comic as well.
Right.
I'll have to check that one up.
Yeah.
And
I think that's right, actually.
Hmm?
When you mention that, I think that's
yeah.
I think that's right.
Yeah. I think his father died on the stage, actually. Yeah.
Because did Gracie Fields not have a brother that performed as well?
He had a brother, yes. Nowhere near the tie.
No.
I saw his brother, I think his name was Sid Field, and he kind of was in the shadow of Gracie, but last time he was on doing variety at London, though, on the Happy Valley. That's quite a few years ago now. Kind of a pier entertainment, but this was kind of a complex near the pier.
Yeah.
But, you know, big letters, Sidfield and that. But he never really made the grade as Grace Field.
Yeah. Did you like the... Another thing I meant to ask you about was musicals. Do you like, or did you like musicals much? Or?
Not a lot, yeah. No. I was more for stories rather than musicals. Of course, a lot of these things have changed. I can stand musicals now and that. Well, I wasn't musically inclined. I mean, I couldn't sing. I mean, when I was 3 years old, no, 4 years old, just starting school there, you know, I got picked out for not being able to sing. I had to go and read a little red book called Red Riding Hood. You know, so after that, I was totally discouraged.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, did you like the action films, the sort of American Cagney and...
Oh, everybody knew that. James Cagney, Edmund O'Brien, Edward G. Robinson, Edward Arnold, Sidney Greenstreet, Peter Lorre, Humphrey Bogart. Oh, yes.
Did you have any favourites among them?
Yes, sometimes. Well, at William Powell, and he used to take part of... detective. Some of the Ellery Queen was an author, but his particular theme was that he would write a book and then he would leave you to kind of, you know, he got so far towards the end, guess who it is, and then he would follow it through by giving, you know, the clues that you've missed, kind of thing.
Yeah. Did you like the sort of mystery?
Oh, yes, films? Well, they're always good with mysteries.
Yeah.
Richard Dix. And then some, you know, some were cowboys, and then they went on to thrillers. Yeah.
Well, what about the women's stars? Did you have any favourites there?
No, Loretta Young and Carmen Miranda, and she was in musicals, of course, and... Oh, Bob Hope was a comedian. He was superb. Of course, he's from London, and of course you've got your Gary Grant. He's from Bristol. Yeah. Yes, a lot of it's coming back now.
Yes.
there's a lot of new ones come out, and they'll last for just so long, and then they've had it, but. Then a lot suffer from John Wayne, I used to like.
Yeah.
Interesting, the other day, I don't know whether you recollected or not, but he died some while ago from cancer. Mm. Now, there's a programme on, quite a good documentary, about 2 or 3 months ago in America, and it was a place where, I think it was in Nevada Desert or somewhere like that, where they did a lot of this atomic bomb testing. And this particular company filming went and made a film in that area. There were quite a lot of dead cow carcasses about on the right. And it wasn't long after that that quite a number of making this film died. I think some were women stars as well.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it was not particularly, you know, very well known.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, there was, Buffalo Bill, you know, people taking Buffalo Bill off. I think he came to Bolton one time, and so did lots of stars that people don't realise. Mm. Oh, so that brings me to a point now where... what else have I got? These are treasures. You'll not see, I don't think anybody in Bolton will show you these anyway. It's a bit drafty, so I trust they don't get torn, but we can hold them carefully.
Yeah.
That's not one, but I mean, that's an old one, you see.
Right.
1968, but I think there's something dealing with pictures somewhere along the line. Oh, that's another one. I think I've got it here somewhere. You know, these old financial things I could take were years ago. Let's see if I have another. No, no, this'll be it. Put that back. They're no use now, you know. Here we are.
Ah. Oh, that's interesting.
Mm.
So this is the Sunday Telegraph, January the 20th, 1985.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie Halliwell and how the silver screen enriched his life during the Depression.
Yes, now at the footnote, I think it will give a reference that may be of interest to you.
Ah, this.
That's it. Yes, have you seen that one?
Parts. I've had it mentioned to me, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I must make a point of looking at that because it does sound really ideal.
Oh, yes, it is. I mean, his book about films in those days.
Yeah.
And what he writes about them is similar to what I experienced, but he really took off with films and kept with films, you see. But his book is more or less the Bible. I think there's been a bit of discussion where somebody's, not very long ago it was mentioned, where they'd taken word for word information out of his book.
Yes, I'm sure, yes.
Yeah. So I don't know whether there's anything additional to this. Well, I used to keep a lot of these for the nature stuff, you see.
Yeah.
So.
I need to see if I can get hold of that in Glasgow, if it's from the Telegraph.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
You'd better check the date, hadn't you, actually?
Yeah. Well, I'll just, I'll read it into the tape, and it's January the 20th, 1985.
Yes,
and
good.
Pick that up.
Yes, good. No, these are the better ones. How far do we go about 1938? Women's shoes at 21 shillings. Oh, that's just the town council. That's not any use. This is the one that I'm coming to. This is 1946, that one. No, that didn't apply. In a minute now. Ah, here we are. This is it. 1934, how about that? Who keeps papers that long? One penny. 1934, how old's that one then? That's 60 year old.
60 years now.
Yes, well, I've got this particularly because it shows the various cinemas.
Oh, that's
not
wonderful.
All of them,
yeah.
But Theatre Royal, for instance, and they give you the stars. Warren William, Mae Robson, everybody knew her, Gene Parker, Ned Sparks, he was, one of the, he was in many, many films, yes. And then the Grand Theatre, that was the live. Live place. That's where a lot of stars went. Hutch and Henry Hall and his dance band and Kitty Masters, they were together. And we've got Jack Holbert. These are comedy. This is the comedy houses I like as well. Jack Holbert and Cicely Courtney, his wife, weren't they? And Wallace Beery, the Bowery.
Yeah.
Well, there was Wallace Beery and there was another Beery, wasn't there? Noah Beery.
Yeah.
And then later on, I think he died some little while ago, was one of the sons. And then, of course, the great actors, the character actors in America were of course the Barrymores. There was Lionel Barrymore, and there was the other Barrymore. Ah, Fair Rye, she was one of the leading ladies. Yes, it's a gem of a picture, paper, isn't it? Jack Orkian, Bing Crosby, Tom Wells and Ralph Lynn, of course, they were in, you know, same similar setup to Jack Hulbert.
The one that the Jack Hulbert, Jack Ahoy, yeah. The Hippodrome, what was that like?
Well, that was very good. That was a cinema initially.
Yep.
And then eventually it became Rep.
All right.
And that's opposite the Bolton Post Office now, the location is.
Right.
And they produced quite a number of outstanding ones. In Hello, Hello, it was his name Kay, who got injured.
Oh, I know the chap you mean.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. He used to perform there with the Lawrence Williamson. Who's the other one? The tall chap with dark hair. He took off the parson. Slim faced.
Derek something.
Yes.
Derek Nimmo.
Derek Nimmo's the one.
Yeah.
Yes. And then there was another one. Another great character actor who's at his father was a parson at Morris Green in Bolton. He's been in quite a number of them. Hard to describe him.
Yeah.
Well, I'll come back to him when I get home, I suppose.
No, I
But, and then the Rialto, no, that's the picture that's on that piece of paper.
Right.
Well, the Rialto, I think, and the Queens, and the one, an out district one called the Carlton, I think they're all on the same circuit.
Right.
You know, i.e., that is one or a few individuals. I think one was a chappy called Crook. He was a money lender come chappy dealt with bootmaking and the likes, you see, and they had money invested in that.
Mm.
Voltaire, this is the chap I'm thinking, one of the greatest actors of all time, which was George Arliss. A story based on the dramatic incident of life of a great French poet, philosopher and firebrand. He was superb with George Arliss. He could take anybody off. Another Charles Laughton. Now, Charles Laughton, did he come from round here? He certainly went to Stonyhurst College, and of course over where those flats are now, Ben Kingsley.
Right.
Yes, he came from here. Greenwood, Walter Greenwood, the author of Love on the Dole and other ones. Leslie Anson, of course, Francis Day. Well, they were here. We've got Reginald Denny, for instance.
Right.
Incredible, isn't it? Nice. And there's Ken Maynard on Come on, Tarzan. Well, Tarzan was the name of his horse.
Ah, right.
And Cicely Courtenage, of course, who was married to Jack Hulbert.
Aunt Sally.
Catherine Hepburn, of course.
Yeah.
I don't know Christopher Strong. Billy Burke. Charles Bickford, he was the real tough guy, he was, you know, an oldish chap, but as strong as they make them. And then we have here Bebby Daniels, of course, she was married to Ben Lyon, and they came and did radio programmes, didn't they?
Right.
The Bell, that's a local one that was on the outskirts, that got burned down. Then we have another one, another cinema called Tin Can, and that was on Tonmore Road, and it was called that because it had a tin roof and a tailstone. You could hear the noise. There was Walter Austin as an actor there.
Yeah.
Kay Francis, the dark haired one. Noel Zaster. Yeah. Philip Holmes. And all these, yeah.
Did he use the papers much as a way to decide what picture to go to?
Yes. Well, it was that. And to give you an all-round where they were. I mean, I went one Saturday night, I was about 13 or 14 years old, thought I would go to the pictures, and I started off at the nearest one, which was then the Carlton, and then I went to the Royal, I think, and then the Rialto, and I went all over Bolton. I couldn't get in.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So was that packed out?
Yes. And it got to that stage where if I'd have got in, I'd have been just in about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But I mean, when it's the those prices here, you see.
It's amazing, yeah.
All things that those prices, roughly, you know. Advertising a penny stage on the tram as being a virtue for buying that house. 36 Third Avenue, modern. Four rooms, bath, pantry, penny stage on a bus or a tram.
That's amazing.
But that's going off the point. Oh, and then of course with Cottonmouth, they had a beautiful competition at the Palais de Dance.
But so were there good places to go dancing then?
They were good, sensible dancing, you know. Yeah. None of this rowdyism, and they didn't need bouncers on the door. And of course they had top buttons as well. And yes, good old. I don't know if there's anything else relative there. No.
Did you go to the dancing much yourself?
No, not a lot. I was a bit of a loner and shy of girls and the likes, and parents didn't encourage me and what have you. And the fact is that life was so rough in those days that, you know, I didn't, you know, when I was that age, I didn't want to commit myself at all to anything like that. So yeah. I like places, I like getting about and seeing things, and there's barely a place in the country as I've not been to. I think the only part I've not been to is about southeast corner.
Yeah.
And I think I've been everywhere else.
Yeah. Well, it's great to get a chance to see that, you know.
Yes, I thought it was. Yeah. And been up in Scotland quite a bit, and Southern Ireland.
Yeah.
But I've never been abroad as such. So I don't think I'm anything else. I've got everything in here, right? Camera and what have you, and timetables and all that, yeah. So,
like me, I've got the world with me, I think.
Yes, well, of course, yeah. You're away and you've got to justify so long.
Right.
So, yeah.
Actually, the one thing that I came across that you might be interested to see is a couple of photos of some of the Bolton cinemas.
Oh, that's the embassy, that's originally called the Electric. There's Woolworths on the side there, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So I think
it became the Imperial, Electric, then the Imperial, and then it became the Embassy. Yeah, and I think the reason it was, as I said, the Electric. Well, yeah, this is on Deansgate now. That's now Woolworths. Yeah. Well, I used to go into Woolworths and get some Mint Imperials, and then I'd go into the Embassy. What's the other one?
The other one is one of the programmes, or
the audience.
Just went from the audience.
Oh yes, what year is this?
It's the 30s again, I'm not sure exactly what the date is. But
Victoria the Great,
Prisoner of Zenda's Ronald Coleman.
Oh, heavens, yes. Prisoner of Zenda, what was the other one? There was, I used to like Alexander Dumas, you know, stuff.
Yeah.
Prisoner of Zenda and the other one, very similar to it.
There was one that he made.
Men in the Iron Mask was one.
Yeah. Mm. What was that one? He made one where he was it's quite a similar story to The Prisoner of Zenda. He was a politician's brother and he had to take over. He was his double.
Yeah.
And he sort of took over his life. And
that's right, yes. Yes. That was
nicer.
Yes. That called up for a lot of good acting, didn't it? To be able to change character so well. Yeah.
He was the one that was really bad, and he was a.
That's right. Yes. And then drop a coin. Yeah, Harold D. Robinson. He was, in a lot of these prohibition, type of film. And Bette Davis.
Yeah.
She was marvellous. And of course, you got Alan Ladd as well.
Yeah.
Jack Buchanan. He was singer and tap dancer, and he was always a joy to watch. Jesse Matthews, of course, you were a good singing star, and of course we had, is it Mary Poppins, Matthews, is it? Who's Mary Poppins? Is it Matthews? It's not Jesse Matthews, I know Jesse Matthews.
I can picture her, but
yeah,
I can't
yeah.
think where her name is.
Well, she was somewhat. She used to come local. She used to come to some of the, variety clubs and the like.
Right.
She was at, and I think she was brought up at Blackpool, and I think her parents were in vaudeville as well. Yes, Frederick March, he was a good scrubber. Oh, John Bowles, he was in Desert Song once.
Right.
And Barbara Stanton, she danced with well back in the summer. She was always. And Edgar Wallace, the squeaker, they used to take a look at this man. He was a writer, he was actually a reporter, a Fleet Street reporter at one time. And Return of the Scarlet Pimpernel, that was one of Leslie Howard's, you know, super ones that, you know, come time and time again. Yeah, the audience there. So that one, as I told you about it, at Kilburn. Did you ever been to London?
I have, yes.
Where did you go? Shall I keep these?
Well, I was going to...
No, it's all right. I don't need them. But then...
As I was saying, the project's going to be doing some work in London. Mm. And we're going to be looking mainly at North London.
Yes, that's right. Harrow? Yeah. Oh, yes. I know Harrow. I've been everywhere, haven't I? Yeah. Yes, Granada, I think it was like that.
Yes.
And that was 1937-38 period. Because I was in London just before World War came to Reading, that's right. I went to a factory at Reading, and then I was in Reading House, or Broad Street, rather, World War came. But previous to that, I was living in North West London. So I only went to cinemas there. The one I was thinking in particular, I think it was the biggest in Europe, called Estate. And that was a super one, of course. They got great big velvet curtains, you know, and decor, and it was a mammoth place. Always smell nice, you know, they got the ladies coming round with those squirt things. Down there, they're quite good value for money. By that I mean to say that they're sometimes two good films on, plus inter-film entertainment. Billy Cotton Jr., his father was dance band leader, but he himself came and was on the stage for so long.
Right.
And that was an additional attraction that quite a number of cinemas. Yes, the Arrow one. I used to live at a place called Kenton.
Right.
Do you know Kenton?
I know where it is.
Yes, it's just a stone's throw from Harrow. I used to work there and lived and worked in Willesden, Cricklewood, Hendon. Used to go to the cinemas there. But I didn't go for 6 months. At a period when I used to walk past the one at Neasden, which is the owner's name, known as Brent.
Mm.
But I just managed to earn enough to pay my board and to save up a few coppers to get my train fare home. I think it was about 12 and 6 return in those days.
Mm.
So I had to walk past this particular cinema. I forgot what its name was, but first time I went was Jack Buchanan, and they said that, Sonia Henson, I think her name was his partner in this particular musical. So it was 6 months without going to the pictures, and then eventually, and then sometimes I used to go down into the city. The only one I seemed to go to was, I think it was the Strand in Philadelphia, the Strand, that's right, because they used to get the films there before they went on circuit, i.e. they were shown in London, and then about a fortnight after that, they got circulated round the country, but in that intervening week, they had them at the Adelphi. So we were able to go there for 6 months and have about 3 or 4 hours watching watching the films.
Right.
Yeah. They were still quite close to back to Wembley Stadium, kind of got Harrow there, Harrow on the Hill where the school is, and then you got Stonebridge Park. I worked at Stonebridge Park for a few weeks at a radio factory there, assembling stuff, and the chappy there, the boss, it was only a little place, was, what was his name, Sobel. Do you know Sobel?
I don't know.
Well, he became Sir Michael Sobel. He eventually owned Michael there,
right.
And he was a father-in-law to Weinstock, who was now, he owns GEC plus AI and all those other ones. But he was an Hungarian refugee, and I remember going to him one time saying, well, you know, you promised me a Tupsinore rise if I was all right. I said, yes. But I was only there about 2 or 3 weeks, and then I managed to get the job back at this aircraft camera place, and from there I went with them to Reading. Well, I got a bicycle, so I was able to get about quite a lot.
Yeah.
I lived at Meesden, and I worked at Wolston, and I found it took quite of an hour's walk. And we're working in a tannery on the wet part, having to wear clogs, so I developed a coins on the feet, and so that you know, it became a bit hard walking, and so got talking to one man, you need a pushback for sale, so for £3 I got a pushback, and that opened a new world to me. I got to know London, and you know, London is an Englishman's London. Sunday mornings with all the any traffic about, and looking down Carlton Terrace, and then South Kent I went to, and all the museums around there, and the, you know, going on the Thames, and then out into the country, went down to the South Coast and what have you. So, you know, I've had my fill, so to speak.
Yes.
And of course, Jack Hilton, you've heard of Jack Hilton, haven't you? He was a band leader. Well, he was born in Bolton. Yeah, there are a lot of names that come, and don't know if there's anything, you know, that's striking at the moment. There will be when I get back.
Yes, well, that's always the way.
Yeah, yeah. Then I do a lot of tape recording as well. You know, if there's anything good, I've got 2 or 3 tape recorders. I don't bother with music much, but classical, all right. Yeah, but a lot of, you know, history stuff and local history, and keen on anything from Anglo-Saxon, Roman upwards, and then I never used to be at one time, and so that's another thing. I look through radio programmes, see what's on, because surprising what comes up. In fact, there's one chap who lived at Salford here, and he was a fireman, and he developed the Northwest Sound Archives.
Right.
And he's based at Clitheroe Castle, and he's been round, he and his associates, with him in particular, interviewing people, whatever jobs there are and things like that.
Yeah.
So it's a case of looking round, as I say, the factory we've just passed at the back there, it's got, I don't know why I mentioned it, it's got Macintosh on the side of it, and that's where Macintosh has originated.
Right.
You know, so it became Dunlop and all that.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
So it's 4:10. Do you want to wander around?
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just...